This happened back when I'd been out of the dating game for about a year or so. And being a painfully awkward person who doesn't really get out much, my best friend had convinced me to try online dating. I thought it was a good idea at the time, so I ended up signing up to that OkCupid website. I could just chat with people for a while, get to know them, then I could work out who was creepy and who was not, then just hit up whoever was the best match. So I meet this guy on the site and we spend a few weeks chatting and getting to know each other. He actually seemed really cool and chill, kinda quirky, but not nearly as red flag waving weird as some of the other guys I'd talked to. When the time was just right, he asked me on a date. And by that point, I was quite excited about meeting him, so I said, sure, why not? I told the guy that I preferred simple, low-profile dates, so he suggested that I go over to his place so he could make us some dinner, and after that we could watch some indie horror films, which was something we were both into. I told my friend about this, the same one who suggested online dating, and we discussed some of the risks of just going over to his place instead of meeting in a public place first. I get that it's a real roll of the dice doing that kind of thing, but there was the minor detail of me being 6'2 and him being 5'7. I know that's hardly a major height difference, and it didn't bother me that he was shorter, especially when it meant that he probably wouldn't be able to straight up overpower me if anything went wrong with the date. Plus, I gotta admit to being a real sucker for a guy that can cook, so that definitely clouded my judgment in many respects. That being said, when I showed up to his place, me and my friend had developed a code word system that we could use through text or calls, and she had all the details of where I was. So, if I got there and things just didn't feel right, I could call her or text her, drop the emergency code word, and she'd think of a reason for me to leave and then come pick me up. Anyway, as I said, I arrived and we got up to his apartment so he can show me around. He started emphasizing his bedroom a little too much, commented on how his big bed would fit me, but I just put that down to some awkward bad taste jokes and got him to move on. After that, he then takes me to the kitchen, where I assumed that he was about to try and claw some points back by actually cooking me dinner. He talked about what a good cook he was and how he was going to wow me with his cooking skills, but when it came to it, he hadn't actually bought anything to cook at all. All he bought for our date was this bottle of red wine, and he claimed that it was super expensive, I guess. I made the mistake of showing up on an empty stomach, thinking that he was actually going to cook for me, so when I found out that I wasn't about to be fed, I was very disappointed, and actually kind of angry too. But then, instead of understanding why I'd been so annoyed, the guy kept emphasizing the bottle, telling me how he'd spent like 100-something bucks on it, and that I should be more grateful that I actually dug deep into his pockets to buy us something like that. Don't get me wrong, I like wine, but I don't know wine. So to me, that thing could have been the rarest bottle in existence or the cheapest crap from the crummiest liquor store, and I've never have known it. So instead of having dinner, we ended up talking over this bottle of wine, which I'll admit was pretty good, but not something I'd ever pay hundreds for. The first actual red flag I noticed was when it became blatantly obvious that he was trying to get me wasted. There came a point where if I took so much as a sip from my drink, he'd be all like, "Want a top off?" and pour even more wine into my glass. That combined with the not making any kind of dinner at all, and I started to get very uncomfortable. I still figured that he was just trying to be romantic or whatever, and that he was just dumb as opposed to malicious or predatory. So, after pretty much forcing him to let me eat the remains of a bag of chips and some toast, I felt together enough to just carry on with the date and see where things went. I mean, he was also drinking pretty heavily, and I always figured those kind of guys would like pretend to drink or something, just to make their date drink more. But he was chugging that wine down like a trooper, so I just slowed my sips until all the wine was gone, then we headed to the couch for some movies. Anyway, we sit on the couch and I ask what movie he'd pick for us to watch. He'd already picked something out and was keeping it a surprise until I got there and had teased me with a selection all day, like, "You're gonna love this movie. It's so hardcore, so underrated," stuff like that. Gotta admit too, I was actually pretty stoked to find out what he'd picked, as I knew that he had good taste and we shared a lot of favorite indie horror movies. But then instead of some hidden gem I'd never heard of, something I could actually take an interest in, something that might salvage what had been a pretty crappy date so far, he pulls out a Serbian film. Now, for those that don't know, a Serbian film basically bills itself as the most graphically gruesome and disturbing movie of all time. I know some people are really into it and can talk for days about all the metaphors, hidden meanings, and theories surrounding it, but me personally, I hate it. It's just an increasingly violent but meaningless mix of gore and adult movies that has zero value past shock. So when he suggested we put it on, I very politely asked if he had anything else in mind because I'd already seen a Serbian film and I wasn't all that excited about watching it again, obviously. But nope, he insists we watch it, picking up on the fact that I wasn't into it and then trying to tell me that the only reason I didn't like it was because I didn't understand it. I pretty much decided there and then that this guy wasn't getting a second date, and as much as I was mad at how patronizing he was, I just kept my cool and got my phone out to text my friend our emergency code word so she could end the date. As soon as I got my phone out and started typing, the guy is like vocally irritated when he says, "Who are you texting?" His tone and attitude once again affirmed why he wouldn't be getting a second shot at this, but again, I just kept my cool and replied, "Just letting a friend know I'll be home late tonight." This is something me and my friend had already planned out, and it worked like a charm. The guy totally thought that he was in the clear and calmed back down again on the assumption that I was going to give him some or whatever. Then a few minutes later, my girl comes through with the call and puts on an Oscar-winning performance that there had been a break-in at our apartment. We live separately. The call volume was loud enough that the guy could hear, and all I had to do was act naturally and sell the bit. My friend then asks if I need a ride from somewhere, and I tell her this guy's whole address, down to the zip code, just to subtly let him know that someone knew where I was. I thought I was going to be out of there in maybe 10 to 15 minutes, but then my friend tells me how she had to drive her little sister somewhere and that she was 40-something minutes away. I was livid. It turned out that she had to run an errand for her mom whose car was in the shop, so I guess it was just bad luck more than her not sticking to the plan. But still, I was pretty horrified to think that I'd have to sit through 40 more minutes of such a gross film with a guy that had gotten way weirder and creepier as he'd gotten drunker. For the next 30 minutes, I had to sit through the guy giving me this whole thesis on why a Serbian film is the best indie horror movie since the Blair Witch Project, and that the reason it's so horrible is because it's a mirror which reflects a decaying society or some nonsense. As the minutes tick by, increasingly weird and gruesome things are happening, but basically, there comes a point when something super gross is happening and a kid is involved, I'll just say that. I don't want to tell you exactly what happens in the movie, less because of spoilers and more because it's so disgusting that I don't want to type it out, but it gets to this really bad part of the movie, and the guy next to me starts breathing super heavy and loud through his nostrils. He'd also insisted on turning the lights off, by the way, which admittedly I did agree to, but then picture the sound of heavy breathing right next to you in a dark room, and you understand how creeped out I was. I gave my head the tiniest little turn, straining my eyes to see what he was doing, and saw him just staring at the screen, first time he'd been quiet for pretty much the whole movie. I then actually turned to face him to say, "You good, dude?" And after giving me this weird little groan of, huh? Actually scoops up the couch a little to be closer to me, like so close our hips are touching. I tell him, "Whoa there, buddy, way too early for that move." But he just sort of whines again and replies, "Why not?" Thankfully, it really was coming close to pickup time, so I could use that as an excuse as to why we couldn't start doing anything. But then he saw it the exact opposite way. Because I was leaving soon, he felt all entitled to getting a little something. Two waves of grossness hit me, one after the other. The first was how poorly he timed his little move on me, coupled with the actual physical contact. Both made my skin crawl, but the second wave of grossness hit me way harder because that's when I considered what had actually prompted his little finesse attempt. He'd been staring super intently into some of the grossest, most obscene stuff I'd ever seen on film, and that's what had him wanting to make out. I cannot overstate how completely creeped out I was. I remember recoiling a little, but then he tried to put his hand on my thigh, and then that was it. I was out of there. I didn't care if I have to wait in the street outside, I was not spending another minute in this creepy, handsy guy's dark apartment. I grabbed my purse, stood up, then told him, "I'm sorry, I have to go." After that, I just marched towards the apartment front door and hoped that he wouldn't try and make a scene in the hallway. He didn't actually follow me outside, which I'm grateful for, honestly. But somehow what he did was way, way worse in terms of how terrifying it was. Picture me walking down the apartment's hallway, almost total darkness, praying that he wasn't about to run up behind me to kill me. And then all I hear in the dark is the screech, and I mean screech of,
"You're not leaving!"
I just zoomed for the door, somehow got it open after panicking that the guy had locked it somehow, then bolted downstairs and out of the apartment building. I kept thinking that he'd follow me with a frickin' knife or a baseball bat or something, and although he didn't, that fear was constantly with me as I power walked up the street, looking over my shoulder every few seconds to make sure that I was still alone. I then gave my friend a call and told her to hurry up, and thankfully she was only a minute or two away, so I was out of the neighborhood and finally safe from the guy, or at least in my mind I was safe from him since I didn't know his neighborhood very well. The whole car ride back, I was telling my friend how a weak start to the date had just descended into this total nightmare, and the whole time she's cringing so hard, until I got to the part about that scene of the movie and how he'd reacted to it. And that's when she started getting scared for me, laying on apologies about taking so long to get to me. Obviously, I forgave her. It wasn't her fault that her mom had a car emergency, but I was still pretty shaken up after having to wait there for so long. I ended up blocking the guy's number before he could try to get in touch with me again, but after a few days of the incident being on my mind, I decided it wasn't enough to just cut him out of my life. He might not have hurt me that night, he might not even try to, but something told me that it was just a matter of time before that guy did something that couldn't be fixed by just a pint of gelato and some girl talk. I know it's not illegal to go on a bad date with anyone, and I know this might make me sound like a total Karen in many ways, but I ended up calling the cops just to tell them what had happened. They agreed that it wasn't illegal to be bad at dating, and I knew trying to pursue assault over his thigh touch thing would just be pointless. But the cops were cool in that they said that they'd keep his name on file just in case anything came up in the future, and they actually thanked me for letting them know, too. That made me feel like I might have actually done something to prevent anything really bad from happening in the future, and part of me hopes the cops went over to warn him, but maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part. What I do know is how that experience totally warned me off of online dating for a few years, and it wasn't until Bumble came out that I actually started dipping my toes back into the water. I know, I wasn't hurt. And I can say that in a world where so many young women's lives are snatched away by violent men, what happened that night still terrified me. And I'd never have guessed that the guy was like that from our few weeks of talking online. But number one thing I learned from it, always, always meet in a public place that you know well for a first date, and always have an escape plan.
This took place in the late 1990s, not too long after I graduated high school. A little backstory first. I met this guy when I was about 14 or 15. He was older than me. I never really knew his age since he often lied to me about it, but he was at least a few years older than me. He became my off and on summer fling slash romance for a few years. Nothing really serious. When I was a senior in high school, we connected during the winter one night, and he asked me to be his girlfriend. I did like him a lot, so we started dating full time. He was sweet. I missed most of the red flags, like him worrying about all the other guys in class noticing me if I wore a dress or something. Right after my 18th birthday, we moved in together. I was still in high school, and I had an after-school job. So I thought I could handle it. Plus, I thought it would be a helpful life partner and we could get a life together. I was wrong. I graduated high school and ended up getting two jobs, and he would keep quitting any job he had. I was also preparing to go to a local college. I was determined to do it all though. After about a year of this, and some really crazy fights that became physical, I ended up just becoming numb to the life I was living now. I say physical, but the truth is, he was physically abusive. Between the physical and mental abuse and torture, he wore me down. I knew I deserved better. I knew he was lying every single time he told me that he would never hurt me again. I also believed him when he told me he would kill me and think nothing of it. I won't tell every single time he beat me, but one of the times I truly thought he was going to murder me. I had been at home with our baby boy while he was out with friends or whatever he was doing. It was a pretty good night. I enjoyed being a new mom, and I'd liked the time away from the guy. It was relaxing. I'll refer to him as Asshole. Well, Asshole came home later this winter night, and he had brought a friend with him. I knew the friend, but not too well. They came in the house, and everything seemed to be going okay. But I noticed that Asshole was being a little sarcastic with his tone towards me. It was a fake nice and sarcasm that usually came before he wanted to start a fight. I then prepared for him to start arguing. I thought that his friend being there would be a safety net of some sort. Boy, was I wrong. I made sure not to do anything to make him mad. I stayed close to my little boy and let him and his friend just hang out, talk, and drink, and whatever they were doing. I couldn't pinpoint exactly what caused him to snap that night, but he did. It was the worst I'd ever seen him. He wanted to fight me. He screamed in my face that he was going to beat me like a man, all while I was holding our baby. His friend followed him, or at least not standing too far away from him. I tried to run, but he blocked me before I could get away. He told me he was going to kill me. I saw his friend just standing there, panicked. I handed him my baby and then said, "Please don't let anything happen to him." The moment my baby was in his friend's arms, I felt my hair being ripped out of my head. Asshole began kicking and hitting me. I got away long enough to make it to the living room where our landline phone was. I dialed 911, and right as I hit the third, he picked me up and then slammed me down on the ground. He slammed the phone down to hang it up and then cracked me on the face with it. I thought for sure that 911 call didn't go through. He began hitting me so hard and choking me that I was blacking out and seeing stars as my head spun like crazy. I looked at his friend and I begged him to go get help. He just stood there, scared to death. Asshole then told him if he did, he would kill him. I understood in that moment that his friend was truly just as scared and didn't know what to do. I wasn't mad at him for not helping. I was just really thankful that he was protecting my baby. I knew this was going to be it. Asshole was going to kill me like he often said he would. He would have no remorse, just as he promised. I wasn't about to make this easy on Asshole. I fought back, harder than I'd ever fought back before. He was on something, which I later found out, so his strength was definitely not something that I could match. Not to mention he was about 100 pounds bigger than me, but I was a mom who wanted to live to see my baby grow up. As he hovered over me, hitting me in the head and choking me, I grabbed his balls and twisted and pulled. It didn't faze him. He was so high. I was tasting blood and feeling so numb. He was beating me so bad that I wasn't even hurting anymore. Maybe it was the adrenaline in the moment. I don't know. But suddenly, the hit stopped. I no longer felt my head getting bashed in, but weirdly enough, I heard a pounding. He got off of me, and for a split second, I didn't know what was happening. I wasn't even sure if I was still alive at this point. Finally, I stood up as he told me to be quiet. The pounding was the police knocking on our door. The 911 call had been an open call, and the entire fight was heard. Asshole answered the door, and he told me to stay back. He started to tell the police some story about the baby just crying. I stepped in the view of the officer who looked at me, and he immediately threw asshole against the outside of her home. The rest seemed to happen so fast. Asshole was being arrested, and an officer was talking to me and taking my statement. One of the cops told me then I had one of the worst injuries he had ever seen a person have and still be alive. Asshole had hurt me so badly that he had beat a hole into my lip where I couldn't even have a drink without the water going through. He called me from jail, and the exact words he said to me was, "Why did you do this?" He really wasn't even sorry at all. He didn't even lie to me this time and pretend that he was. I left him. He was eventually sentenced to 26 days in jail. He never served them because he moved to another state before he could be arrested. He managed to find me and stalk me, but I'd stayed strong and stayed away from him. Eventually, he had moved on to his next target. I have truly felt so much guilt over this, but the next woman was beaten and choked too. But she wasn't just beaten, she was also choked to her death. He took the life of someone, and I'm sure he thought nothing of it, just as he always said to me. I know deep in my heart that if I hadn't walked away, it would have been me he killed, but I'm so sorry to that woman's family. He's in prison now, probably feeling no remorse at all, but hopefully he's getting justice served to him in other ways. I'm just so glad that I actually got away from him.
I'm a cow farmer in the Midwest. It's not the best work, but it is work, and with how hard it is to find a job with decent pay these days, I've learned to appreciate it. The job entails cleaning up after the cows, checking their hooves, milking, and helping them give birth when necessary. It's a pretty messy job when you look at it from the outside, but I gotten pretty used to it. I don't even smell the stink anymore like I did when I first started. It used to be almost unbearable, but now, really nothing. The farm was my father's before me and his father's before him. And the story I'm about to tell you is my dad's. He told it to me back when I first started the job as almost a what not to do when tending to the animals and working on the farm. He's long past now, God rest his soul, but this story has haunted me for years, so I figured I'd let other people hear it and judge it for themselves. This is back in the 60s when Dad was in his early 20s. He worked on the farm with his father, Bill, at the time. He hated it. He hated the stench that would only get worse when the heat came in the summer and picking up after the cows was the worst. See, the cows stayed in this huge barn. It was actually more like a big warehouse where they're fed and kept throughout the night. They got to graze during the day, and throughout the night the cows would defecate and their feces drop to the concrete floor beneath them. Then in the morning, when the cows would go out to graze, my dad would take a really long hose and spray the droppings to the end of the building down a shaft that leads to a big tank below the barn. The tank would fill with the droppings, and once a week we had a guy that would come by and empty the tank and dispose of the waste. It was really nasty work, but my dad did it nonetheless. Well, my grandfather decided that was just too much work to do on the farm with just himself and my dad, so they decided to hire another farmhand. They didn't get anyone interested in the job for the first few weeks until they met a man at a local feed store named Fred. He was in his late 20s and eager to work. He hadn't had a job in years and was desperate for pay since his wife was pregnant with their first child. My grandfather hired him right there in that feed store, and by the next day, Fred was on the farm working harder than anyone my dad had ever seen work. He was determined and super ambitious. He was constantly running around the farm fixing stuff that needed fixing and trying to learn absolutely everything it was that they did. He loved the job and told everyone how he just wanted to be good at what he was being paid to do. He believed in good, honest work and that people should earn the money they're working for. My dad admitted he loved having Fred around, not just because he worked hard, but also because he was gullible and pretty easily manipulated, I guess. My dad had certain tasks given to him by my grandpa throughout the day, and each time he was told to do something, he just passed that task along to Fred. He didn't mind because he didn't know, and my dad didn't care because it meant less of the work that he hated. About 4 months went by with Fred doing most of the work around the farm, and my dad even started to find it a little funny that he really would do whatever he was told. Without question, he was happy to do it. One hot summer morning, the cows had just gone out to graze, and my grandpa told my dad to spray the droppings down the shaft at the end of the barn like he usually did. My dad then passed the job along to Fred as he sat along the side of the barn to have a smoke. When Fred was done, he came outside to tell my dad that he had an idea that he thought would highly benefit the farm. He told my dad that if he emptied the tank below the barn themselves, they'd be able to use the cow feces as manure in the fields. It would fertilize the plants and make them grow bigger and faster. My dad told me that at first he thought the idea was stupid, but then he figured it would be funny to see if Fred actually tried and emptied that feces tank, so he agreed. He didn't tell my grandpa because he knew he never would have approved, and he just wanted to see how this would play out. He showed Fred where to go to the release valve and emptied the tank into the big barrels. He told him to be very careful and to not turn the valve too fast, otherwise the line would get clogged and they'd have to call someone to fix it. My dad then left Fred alone to do what he had planned and decided to take a walk around the barn to check the gates and make sure everything was in order. What my dad didn't know at the time was that Fred would end up turning the valve too fast, and the line would end up getting clogged. Fred would then open the tank from above and reach a pole into the sludge to try and dislodge whatever was blocking the line. My dad heard screaming coming from inside the barn, and he rushed over to see what was wrong. He made his way down into the tank and was horrified by what he found. Fred had fallen into the huge 5,000-gallon tank that hadn't been emptied for a week and was now drowning in the thick feces, desperately reaching out for help. By the time my dad got to the top of the ladder and looked into the tank, all he could see was Fred's hand poking out of the brown goo. He grabbed onto it and tried pulling him out, but he had no leverage at all on the top of that tank. He managed to pull Fred up long enough for him to tell my dad that he was just trying to fix it himself, since he knew that they'd have to pay someone for his mistake. He felt bad. My dad reassured him everything would be okay and to just hold on. And that's when his grip failed and Fred plunged back under the thick excrement once again. This time, no part of Fred's body was able to be grabbed onto to possibly rescue him. My dad had no idea what to do, so he ran across the farm as fast as he could to get my grandpa, who immediately called the police. And by the time they made it back to the tank, Fred's hand had disappeared under the sludge, and there was nothing my dad and grandpa could do but wait. The police showed up with firemen, and they didn't know much of what to do either. They ended up reaching a metal pole down into the tank with a sort of loop on the end, and when they pulled Fred out, it was very clear that he had passed. My dad was horrified and felt like it was his fault. He knew it was a bad idea, but thought it would be funny. He could have stopped Fred, but his own arrogance let him do it. Fred's wife became a widow and she never remarried. She named their son after him and eventually moved out of town. My dad made a point to work as hard as Fred did every day for the rest of his life, in honor of the man whose death he felt he was responsible for. My dad passed away in 2018, and the last thing he said to me was to never take advantage of someone's hard work.